And now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome again to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Adairan Jenkins. Today on the show, Hedaya.
From mini shows on Shout Out to full show of their own, Steph catches up with this National Muslim Help Group. And Operation Mincemeat.
It's a true story of bravery and daring during World War II. Now, it's also a stage show opening in the West End.
All that and more today, right here on Shout Out.
I think that was actually quite good. Okay.
The actual backing goes on for like 28 minutes.
All right, well, could
should we have the actual one?
Yeah. Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum.
Rubbish!
I don't remember it, guys, every week.
Hang on.
Rubbish.
2 out of 10.
Oh, no, okay. But do you know what this means?
I thought you were going to beatbox that.
What? No, but I thought that was... Oh, okay.
We preferred the beatboxing.
Okay, well, I was just riffing on the beatbox. And then I thought, well, actually, I'll try and do the original. This just means there's room for improvement. This is what I'm hearing.
And Darren made the mistake of telling me before we went on air that she couldn't beatbox very well, but she was trying to beatbox to the song that was playing before the news.
Yeah.
So she dared me, so we started the show with a beatbox.
Look, at the end of the day, you never know when you're going to need to whip one out, okay? You never know when you're going to be asked to beatbox in your everyday life. It can happen when you're least expecting it.
I think Lucy can secretly beatbox too, really. Can you beatbox?
Nothing I can't do, Andy.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Said in my most capable voice.
And a glint in your eyes, which the listeners can't see.
And you'll never find out.
Seriously, can you beatbox, though? Can you...
Do bit cats or dogs with it?
No, I've never tried,
boots and cats.
No, well, I'm really sorry. No, really put me on the spot now. I mean, look,
you said you could do anything.
I could just about read the news, Andy, and I get confused by the long words. All right, I'm just here to read off a script.
Are you crossing all the long words out? Is that what you're?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
So, I won't lie. I don't know how Terry does it sometimes. I mean, some of the words that are in the news script are total and utter stumpers, and he just reads them like a consummate professional.
Do you think it's a challenge? Each week he's setting himself a new challenge.
I think he purposely puts the odd word in each week.
He does it to torture us. Yeah. He definitely does.
Are we right, Terry? Is that true?
And the Welsh words that you usually put in.
Just, are you playing a lot of Scrabble and then you're just going, well, I can add this word in, I can add this word in?
No, Connect Four. Me and Ez play Connect Four.
Oh, good game.
We're waiting for the programme to start.
Now, you're going to let them into the little secret of why it always sounds so professional. Because I want to ask you, how is it you do it so well? And do you remember what you told me?
No, what did I say?
You said, as long as you say it with firm conviction, it doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong, people will believe it.
That's what the BBC do, you see, yeah.
If only you had some paper just to shuffle in front of you to make sure that you really know what you're doing.
So, yes. You have had some words that stumped you every now and again, though,
haven't
you?
Yeah, quite a few, yeah.
I've got a challenge for you, Terry. Try and get the word flocky knocky nailapilification into a news item.
Is that Welsh?
I have to wait till next week.
No, now.
Do you know what it means, though?
It's the act of saying that something's worthless.
Is that really? Not Welsh, guys? I'm sorry. That's a Welsh word. That's, that's not English. What did you just say?
Flocky knocky.
Flocky knocky nailapilification.
Is that
flocky
not.
Flocky knocky nailapilification.
You know that town that's really long in Wales? That
go, go, go.
Yeah. Clanfair, Forth Gwynedd, and etc. Go, 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 isn't it, Terry?
Something like that. Yeah. 61 letters, yeah.
All of the correct information tonight on Shout Out for you guys.
Yeah. I can remember at primary school everyone being really happy that they'd learnt the word anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Yes.
You know, that was a big one when I was a kid.
Mm. How about supercalifragilisticexpialidocious? Wait, sing along.
I'll get my beatboxing out again. Hold on.
See that umbrella in the corner with a penguin on it?
No.
That's Steph's. It's not a penguin, though, is it?
No.
It's parrot.
Where are you looking?
I'm pretending. Oh, it's radio. You do that. You know? I mean, it's like when Steph turns up in the TARDIS, she doesn't actually turn up in the TARDIS.
Wait, just what? Pretend.
Really?
Don't tell them that. Wow. No. We have punctured so many illusions today. I can't beatbox. Steph isn't actually in a
but
TARDIS.
But you can beatbox.
Well,
TARDIS you can. Yeah.
I mean, you didn't have a failed attempt, so the allure is still there.
Is this where we're supposed to set you a challenge that you two have got to learn to beatbox by Pride?
Oh, well, I can do it.
And then you can do it live on the day at Pride.
Don't worry about it, guys. I'm warming up.
Lucy looked at me with horror.
You know that Mary Poppins is a Time Lord, though?
Oh, well, that's a theory, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that one before.
Yeah, and her bag that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside is a TARDIS.
It's a TARDIS.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Is yours a...
What, my Zimmer frame?
Is it a TARDIS?
Of course my Zimmer frame's a TARDIS. It's parked out the front. It has its own reserve space.
What's the number plate read?
There is no number plate. No? It's a Zimmer frame. No. You don't need number plates for Zimmer frames.
You can get a personalised one.
I know you can. Yes.
It's got go faster stripes down the side.
Yeah, oh, that's cool.
Oh, yeah. I always walk faster when I'm using the one with go faster stripes.
Custom paint job.
But if you want to see it, you can see it all on Pride Day. We should be out on the march.
Yep, so go slow so we'll be able to keep up with you. Especially wandering up Union Street.
Is that our version of Where's Wally? Just where's Steph Zimmerframe?
You can't normally miss Steph, to be fair. I mean, she's normally covered in wires with a microphone in her hand and a big fluorescent jacket and walking backwards, much to everyone's horror.
Well, I've got somebody behind me guiding me.
I don't think you have this year, have you?
Yeah, not this year. No. You've got your own mic this year, so there's two of us on the march this year.
Yes, I will be on the march talking to people.
Yes. Mm.
Yeah. Wow. Look forward to it.
There is no gun being held to her head, just for the audience.
It's sounding very scary when you say that, too.
No, you know? I'm really looking forward to it. I'm not quite sure. Without a new script, I'm not quite sure what's going to happen. So, yeah, it'll be a fun time.
Yep. Anyway, we're going to talk to Hidaya in a minute. It's lovely to hear from them. We haven't heard from them in a while, have we?
So. No, it looks as though they're going to negotiate another podcast on this very show once a month.
Oh, marvellous. Cool. Well, you caught up with them. Let's find out what they've been up to.
Those of you who have been listening to Shout Out for a number of years now will remember Hidaya, and they had a podcast within our show that was monthly. Giving voice to queer Muslims, not just in Bristol, but just about everywhere. And I'm joined by Dina from Hidaya. Welcome, Dina.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, you've got this big event coming up. Now, for those new listeners or those who might have forgotten, tell us a bit of background of Hidaya.
So Hidaya was founded for queer Muslims, and it has since grown quite a bit. It started off and continues to be entirely volunteer-led and is a safe space for LGBTQIA plus Muslims to come together, to meet each other, to find family in each other, especially when that might not have been possible with their born families, especially given the kind of difficulties that a lot of queer Muslims face in, you know, being able to reconcile their faith identities with their queer identities. And it is an organization that I joined in 2020, so kind of in the midst of the pandemic. And I can confidently say that it was one of the best decisions I ever made. I actually came about Hidaya kind of by chance when I was going through my own journey. And I found that I was a bit intimidated, to be honest, because I am not out to my family and never will be. So I was wondering if I could really be involved in something like this as someone who isn't out in any way or visible in any way. But I was writing some articles about my experience as a queer Muslim under the pseudonym Dina, which is not my real name. And the chair came along and kind of got in touch with my editor, and she was like, well, I really want to speak to Dina and kind of ask her to volunteer for us. And, you know, I was a bit hesitant at first, but I was really glad when I was able to speak with her and found we had so much in common. We both are from very similar backgrounds, both from East London. And I am really grateful to the chair, Shalina, for having reached out to me and kind of bringing me into this wonderful journey. So I've been actually delivering events for Hidayah for 4 years now, and it's been such a joy and really rewarding, because it's a way for me to kind of give back to my community, my ummah, which is kind of the word for like the Muslim community.
It sounds like Hidayah actually saved you, Dina.
They really did. And I think there's a very important quote from the Quran, which is that whoever saves the life of someone, it is like they've saved all of humanity. And it sounds a bit like, you might think it's a bit of an exaggeration, but actually there are so many people who are driven to self-harm, suicide, and other sort of mental health issues as a result of their kind of experiences of not being able to reconcile their queer identity with their faith identity, feeling like, you know, God hates them, or that, you know, that their family can't accept them. And, you know, Hidayah was really a great way for me to kind of open my eyes to the fact that there are other people out there who are also queer Muslim, because it's very easy to feel alone. And the great thing about the events that, you know, I run is that there are people there who have never met another queer Muslim in their life. And then they come to our event, and then they're surrounded by queer Muslims. And then they realize that there's actually so many other queer Muslims out there who have similar experiences, who have different experiences. And there's just something truly magical and spiritual in how we are able to kind of share those, share joy. And the other thing I'd say is that, like, it is very easy to kind of think about the negative experiences, the difficult experiences. And I think those are very important to focus on. But I think it's also important to focus, especially in Pride Month, in the stories of joy, of love, of hope. A couple of years ago, the first time, a really, really lovely guy, he's actually volunteering for us now. And we sort of asked him, oh, would you like to come to our Pride event that we've got later on in the year? And he was like, oh, I'm not really sure. So we kind of said, you know, it would be really fun. And we kind of persuaded him to go. And he did come. And then he met someone there who is also one of our volunteers. And I'm very happy to say they are now married, which is a wonderful thing, and a lovely story that I can kind of take a little bit of credit for. But they didn't meet at my event, and I think that's a really beautiful thing, because I think there's something in being able to find community in other people, whether whether it's, you know, in people who you volunteer with, or people that you meet at events, other people who use our services. It's a really unique experience, and it's also, this is often a community that's not really thought about as much. You know, when you think about queer community, you don't necessarily think about a hijabi Muslim like me, or if you think about the Muslim community, you don't necessarily think about a funky lesbian like me. So it's great to kind of have this space where we can kind of truly be ourselves and be safe in that space, because we take a lot of precautions to make sure that our events are, you know, really secure, and that people feel that they are comfortable and that they're not going to be outed in that space, which is for me also very important on a personal level, but then also for our service users, who many of whom are in a similar position.
We get a similar story from all religions, that especially mm-hmm. Christianity and Islam. And it seems that the main basis of any religion is love, isn't it? And
absolutely.
I really don't understand how whether parents or somebody who is deeply religious misses that point, that the basis of any religion is love. And that doesn't matter who you are, what you are, you should start off with that premise, love.
Absolutely, yes. And you know, like, if you think about Islam, one of the 99 names of God in Islam is you know, the loving one. And so, like, absolutely, the basis of faith is, in my opinion, love and justice and standing up for the most marginalized and deprived in our communities. And I think that's like the kind of guiding principle for me as a Muslim. But also, I think it's important to consider things from a kind of intersectional perspective. So also thinking about the fact that most queer Muslims are also people of colour, and so they also face a lot of racism. And I think just speaking about my experience here, my parents are immigrants. They came to the UK with very little, and I think there was a certain level of expectation of assimilation which had to happen. And I think a lot of the kind of apprehension that comes with, you know, queer identities and accepting queer identities, it comes from a place of already feeling othered as, you know, a person of colour. You know, I grew up in one of the most deprived boroughs in the country. Lots of other queer Muslims have a similar experience. And so it can be really difficult to kind of, you know, have this part about, you know, you where you are more other than before, if that makes sense. Like, you are more outside of society as a result, or you're outside of the norm, and that can, and I come at this from a place of empathy because and sympathy, because although there's kind of a lack of acceptance when it comes to queer Muslims as a whole, I've also heard wonderful stories of Muslim parents who have been very accepting of their queer kids. And so I don't think it's kind of a tarring everyone with the same brush either. And, you know, I've heard similar things from other faith communities. And what I will say is that I think we as queer, as Muslims, as a Muslim community, can learn a lot from the kind of queer leadership that exists in other religions. Like, I know that there's quite a few queer rabbis that are out there, quite a few queer priests that are out there. I was actually part of this photography collection of well, I didn't really feel like I belonged in there, to be honest, but it was queer religious leaders. So I was in there, I was kind of anonymized in it. There were some other wonderful people, and I think probably the majority were people of Christian or Jewish faith who were kind of blazing a trail in terms of queer leadership in religious spaces, which I think is fantastic. And I think we could learn a lot about how we are able to kind of fortify our religious spaces to make them safer for queer people, more accepting of queer people. Because at the moment, the way things stand, there isn't really a mainstream Muslim space that allows for that.
Mm. Well, the world is in a bit of a turmoil at the moment, isn't it, Dina?
Absolutely.
There is, luckily, there are, like you alluded to, a lot of religious people who like to keep contact with other religions. And I think it's all about not just that, the L word, love. It's also about the R word, respect, and respecting somebody's beliefs. That they might be a little bit different, but I think engaging with other people, whether whatever your background and whatever, whether you're religious, spiritual, whatever, helps you understand people better, and then you become less frightened, and then that prejudice goes away.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what I was saying earlier about how there are queer Muslims who have never met another queer Muslim, I think that also applies to people who aren't queer Muslim. So other queer people, have they met queer Muslims before? Have they met queer people of faith before? Have they been able to have conversations about why certain narratives or certain milestones about coming out aren't necessarily applicable to queer people of faith, or may not have the same relevance or significance or possibility for queer people of faith, and especially queer people of colour who also queer people of faith? Like, when there are these multiple barriers that kind of intersect and compound someone's marginalization, is it possible for them to go through this, what I feel is a bit of an arbitrary thing in my position? I think continual kind of communication, collaboration, understanding other people's perspectives, and ultimately storytelling. I think storytelling is at the heart of this, because if people understand the kind of experiences that people have, the stories that they're able to tell, I think it's super empowering and a way for us to have visibility where that might not always be possible, just because of thinking about factoring in safety and so on. So I, for example, would never be pictured or kind of go on video doing anything, because it just doesn't feel safe for me. So I think it's also around working around this.
Now, Dina, we're running out of time, so we really need to put this event out there that you've got coming up on Bristol Pride Day. to help others. So if you could give me the dates, and obviously you were alluding to safe space and being careful. So I'm guessing you're going to be careful on what information you actually put out, but at least people can get in touch.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So we are holding an event on the 12th of July. It's from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. So it kind of coincides with after the Bristol Pride March. And it is just a meet and greet. We're just going to have some food. We're going to play some games. We have done some really fun quizzes and diversity bingo and really enjoyable things like that. And in terms of security, we do a lot to make sure that we keep our spaces safe. So we don't actually advertise exactly where the event is located. We will be sending that location to those who have signed up 2 days before the event. And we ask that everyone keeps that to themselves and doesn't share it with anyone. And I can confidently say in the 4 years that I've been running events, we've never had any issues with this, like in terms of people coming who shouldn't be there. So I think that is a key thing for us. We take safeguarding very, very seriously at Hidayah, and we also have a membership scheme to make sure that we can kind of make sure we know who's there and that they are who they say they are. But that information is kept completely confidential and is protected in terms of data protection laws. So in order to attend the event, you need to sign up via OutSavvy. So we have an OutSavvy page that is on our link tree. If you go to our socials on Instagram, on Twitter, on LinkedIn and Facebook, we have the event advertised there. So you're welcome to kind of look that up. We also have it on our website, so you can find the link there. There's, if you need anything in terms of questions around the event, what it will include, please feel free to email me. The email address is events@hidayahlgbt.co.uk. So Hidayah is spelled H-I-D-A-Y-A-H. So if you have any questions, and also if you are someone who is an asylum seeker, a refugee, or you're unemployed and you're a queer Muslim, please reach out to us and we can give you a free ticket. And that's just something that we always offer to make sure that we're not letting cost be a barrier to anyone. But otherwise, tickets start at £10, and they also, we also allow for allies to come, especially queer Muslims, kind of loved ones of queer Muslims, you know, partners, family members, friends. So very welcome to attend, and I'd love to see you there.
Thank you so much, Dina, and more power to you. Your organisation does a lot of good out there for the LGBTQ community, and it's great to be here. And please keep in touch. So when you've got other events coming up, get in touch and we'll get you on there again. Thank you so much, Dina.
Thank you so much for having me, Seth.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Shut up and dance. Do you see? No, sorry, that's Fire Walk the Moon.
Okay. Okay, everyone, well, I was dance. On the sofa. I was on the sofa. I was dancing.
So, yeah, we're talking about movies off air there for a minute. There's a lot of good ones out, isn't there?
Well, we were discussing the Queer Vision lineup, which I know Steph talked about 2 weeks ago, last week.
Yeah.
Yep. But we were just talking about what we would really like to go see, and there's some absolute classics coming back.
Yeah, you said you see Brokeback Mountain in IMAX.
Yeah, yeah. That'd I think it's cool. In the IMAX. And then we were also saying, as well as Brokeback Mountain, there's going to be a screening of Showgirls, and I will be there because that is a camp classic.
So many of them. We're teaching the Darren all the old.
Yeah, it turns out I don't know a single movie ever. Because all of these, I'm like, oh, I'm taking notes. I'm writing them down.
Beautiful Thing.
No.
No.
Wasn't
no.
God.
Oh, I think My Beautiful Laundrette might be part of it as well. Actually, I might have, or maybe I'm just, maybe I hallucinated that one. But that's a very good one.
Too. I do.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
I have watched 3 lesbian movies, I think, in my life. One was A Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
That brilliant. One, that's yeah, good. Banger.
I watched Carol.
Banger. You're getting very close to the Holy Trinity of amazing lesbian movies here.
And then I watched Imagine Me and You.
Okay.
Yeah, I love that one.
I think because I wanted to stop being so sad about how everyone is just in the Middle Ages or like just not normal, regular Lifetime kind of movies. So yeah, I watched
it's
that
a
one.
Typical British rom-com.
Yeah.
You know, like about a boy.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, it's gay. Love it.
Yeah, and also the lead actress then went on to be in Game of Thrones and be completely evil. Yes. So, yeah.
Anyway, should we get some news headlines?
Yes. This is Shoutout News. Welcome along.
The National, a Scottish-based newspaper, reports this week that the government's Equality and Human Rights Commission, which many people feel has been taken over by anti-trans feminists or right-wing apologists, has been forced to change its advice on single-sex toilets and other sex-based spaces. The National reporters say the EHRC has changed its original guidance to remove its claim that the Supreme Court ruling means workplaces must provide single-sex toilets. The alteration is signposted on its original page and dated June 24th. Guidance now states, in relation to workplaces, requirements are set out in the Workplace Health, Safety and Welfare Regulations of 1992, and these require suitable and sufficient facilities to be provided, including toilets and sometimes changing facilities and showers. Toilets, showers and changing facilities may be mixed sex where they are in a separate room lockable from the inside, and where changing facilities are required under the regulations and where it is necessary for reasons of propriety, there must be separate facilities for men and women or separate use of those facilities such as a separate lockable rooms. The Good Law Project, which has an activist base and campaigns on many progressive issues, said that the EHRC had conceded a key legal point in their updated guidance.
Humanists UK, which campaigns on issues of relevance to atheists, humanists and non-Christians, has pointed the finger this week at shadowy far-right and fundamentalist groups that seek to turn the UK into what it describes as a fantasy land. In a press release, Andrew Copson for Humanists celebrates recent parliamentary wins but warns of lobbying. He says, just days ago, MPs voted 379 to 137 to remove abortion from the criminal law for women in England and Wales. For the first time, therefore, in over 160 years, a woman will no longer risk a police investigation simply for ending her own pregnancy or for suffering a miscarriage. In the same week, the assisted dying bill passed the House of Commons, an historic beacon of hope for those suffering needlessly at life's end. He said, these are landmark wins, but even before the relevant bills have become law, the forces opposed to them are reportedly wasting no time setting out a plan to overturn them. Reform UK is said to announce in its next manifesto that, if elected, it will reverse the legalisation of assisted dying. Multiple groups are also planning to challenge the abortion reforms. A growing movement, cloaked in the language of freedom and morality, is already working to transform the UK into their fantasy of a Christian country and undo decades of social progress. Make no mistake, our victories are fragile, and the forces seeking to undo them are vast, coordinated, and well-funded. Mr. Copson goes on to appeal to all secularists to join the Humanist Association.
The gay men's fashion website Andrew Christian blogs this week on pretty privilege within our communities and how we need to work at honouring all our friends and acquaintances. They say, if you've ever felt invisible in a sea of six packs and filter perfect selfies, you're not alone. You don't need a six pack to be sexy. You don't need to fit one narrow standard to be desirable, valuable or worthy of love. And they continue, bodies change, beauty fades. Confidence, kindness, humour or heart, that's what draws people in and what keeps them there long after the abs stop popping. So if you've ever felt out because you don't look like the it boy of the moment, you are not the problem. You do not need to change yourself to fit in, and your worth is not measured in likes, waist size or jawlines. And if you do happen to fit those beauty standards, awesome, but make room for others. Celebrate diversity in every form, bodies, ages, races, gender expressions and abilities. And remember, when our spaces are inclusive, everyone wins. Body positive bloggers welcome the timely post at the start of Pride and summer clubbing season.
Progressive Newswire Alternate reports that a major upset occurred in New York City's Democratic mayoral primary when, on Tuesday night, June the 24th, Progressive State Assemblyman Zohran Mamdani defeated former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and other establishment Democrats he was running against. Endorsed by Senator Bernie Sanders and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, both existing Democrats, the 33-year-old Mamdani is a self-described democratic socialist and a Muslim who was born in Uganda but raised in New York only. Within minutes, the right-wing internet hate sites went into meltdown with claims that Christians would now be rounded up in New York and that Mr. Mamdani was going to abolish the police service. More recent internet posters pointed out that it was the right-wing who were the real extremists and could be measured by their outrage at Mr. Mamdani's spectacular electoral performance.
Karen Garvey of Bristol Museums has been in touch with all the community radio stations in the city to bring listeners' attention to a very special Pride Month tour. I'm delighted to let you know that the first of our LGBTQIAP+ events to accompany the Gender Stories exhibition at Bristol Museum and Art Gallery is now live on the website, she says. The ever-brilliant Jack Shoulder is delivering LGBTQIAP+ tours of the museum, and tickets include entry to the exhibition and are reasonably priced at £6 or £4 for sessions. For full information, visit the Bristol Museum's website.
Eric Dupre, Dr. Derek Dupre, that is a cultural anthropologist, author, and heathen whose research explores masculinity, queer culture, and the intersection of occult mysteries. In the current edition of the pan-pagan magazine The Wild Hunt, Mr. Dupre says that many people are embracing earth-based religions as means of finding meaning in a disconnected internet world of hate. Climate chaos accelerates, he said. Institutions falter. Grief hums beneath the surface of everyday life. In the midst of this instability, people are reaching not for quick fixes but for something enduring, something rooted, and for a growing number of us, paganism, polytheism and heathenry are exactly that, he says. In a society that glorifies disconnection, where hustle drowns out stillness, ritual can become revolutionary, like lighting a candle, marking the solstice, speaking the names of those that have come before. These acts may seem small, but they are how we resist erosion. They say, I will not forget or vanish. I will stay rooted. And through these practices, we begin to remember one of the deepest truths that our traditions offer. We are not alone. Community is not an ornament. It is essential. So pagan, polytheist and heathen communities are not just gatherings of like-minded individuals. They're networks of care. We feed each other at festival tables. We hold vigil in hospital rooms. We grieve in a circle, sing through sorrow and celebrate life's thresholds with firelight and story. These aren't abstractions, they are embodied rituals of belonging, and they show how we can endure together.
And finally, Ireland's RTE Radio 1, which broadcasts talk and features on a wide variety of subjects and current affairs, says that leather people may be able to enjoy some refreshingly ethical products as they pursue the wide open world of queer fetish. Sinead Courtney for RTE Radio 1 takes up the story of Oscar Canavan Doyle from Dublin, who is a second-year fashion design student at the National College of Art and Design and is passionate about creating textiles from scratch. They have spent much of the last year experimenting with fish leather, taking waste fish skins from a local fishmonger and turning them into a waterproof, flexible textile that doesn't smell like fish. Oscar said, "The fashion industry isn't sustainable in so many ways, but as a young designer, the only way I can look at things is how I'm producing and how I'm working."
Now I know what I'm wearing to Pride. What's that I hear you say? You want more LGBTQIA+ news and content? Never fear. Check out Britain's network of community radio stations for more, as well as looking up podcasts through your search engine. Why not get stuck into our additional content? All online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Lucy Potter
and Terry Starr.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Now, Operation Mincemeat. Now, I think most of us have heard in history about Operation Mincemeat, but obviously this is a theatrical version. I'm joined by Danny Becker. So, Danny, welcome to Shout Out. Before we get into Operation Mincemeat, can you just give us a bit of background of yourself and how you got into theatre?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here. So I've always loved theatre. I got the musical theatre bug very, very early. I was lucky enough to kind of grow up just outside North London in a place called Bushey with parents that loved the arts, really, and loved film and theatre. So every year for my birthday, it would be this big yearly treat that they would take me to see a West End show. And my whole year would lead up to it. I would be so excited. I think the first thing they took me to see was Cats. And I remember being quite terrified of these dancing cats. But at the same time, absolutely mesmerized. There was something about that energy of theatre that I think you feel at any age. And it's just, I found it so, so captivating. And then my love grew. And I was obsessed with musicals such as Wicked and Spring Awakening. And then joined my local Amdram group, which kind of nurtured my singing and dancing. And then I was lucky enough to get into the Brit School of Performing Arts at 16. And that was the most incredible 2 years of my life, not just as a performer, but really as a human being. And then that led me on to my official kind of degree, drama school at Arts Ed. And then I'm about to celebrate 10 years in the business, which I can't believe. I've been doing this for nearly a decade now.
Wow. Well done. I guess you're going to have a party.
Oh, well, yeah. Some lovely drink somewhere, maybe, yeah.
Right. Now, tell us how you converted Operation Mincemeat into a musical.
Well, I'm not actually the writers. I've nothing to do with the conception of the show. That was an incredible bunch of people that go under the name Spitlip Company. And three of their performers, the writers were also performers in the original cast, who are now on Broadway. So you can go and see them there as well. But it is the most incredible, clever musical comedy that has so much heart. And it's about, do you want to know what it's about?
Or? Oh, yes, please. Yeah. Well, yeah, okay. What you can tell us, I don't spoil it for us. But
yeah, oh, no spoilers. And we're very careful of what we share, because there's lots of amazing surprises in the show that will really, that audiences absolutely love. But it's essentially about these five people that work at MI5 in 1943, in the height of World War II. And they come up with this deception plan involving fake documents, a dead corpse, and it basically tricks Hitler into moving 100,000 of his troops to a different place and helps us win the war. It's a true story, but it's told in the most brilliant, hilarious way, with incredible songs, and we're playing like a million characters each. So it's only five of us in the cast, which makes it even more special. I think I play about genuinely 27 different characters throughout the night. I have a main character, and then I have all these other characters, which makes it so fun to perform.
Wow, that sounds so complex. Aren't you worried that you might trip up and sort of come back on stage and start performing in the wrong character?
I'm worried that I might trip up. Yes, luckily now it's very in my body, and I know my track, as we say it in theatre, where you go A to B kind of thing. But to be honest, it's just completely thrilling, because I mean, it's amazing just doing one part in a show, of course, with a good journey. But to get to kind of stretch myself every night. Because I play, my main character is this woman called Hester. She's this 45-year-old woman, very closed off, stiff upper lip, but with a massive heart. And then I get to play like a crazy, mad coroner who's completely over the top and camp, and then this American guy. And so I get to kind of do everything that I possibly can do in 2.5 hours. So it's...
Now, I'm guessing, Danny, that off stage there's a huge crew of people waiting to grab you, to strip you off and dress you.
Hopefully,
the outfit.
Well, funnily enough, we only have two dressers every night, one in each wing, because there's only five of us. And the way they do it really cleverly is it's all add-ons. So we have like a base costume, and then we add a hat, and then we add a jacket, and it kind of works like that. But there are some very quick changes.
Right. Tell us the dates and where you're actually performing. And then I'm going to ask you, so be prepared. I'm going to ask you what you're going to be doing next.
But okay,
those things you can actually share. If you can't share, you're coming back, Danny.
Okay, wonderful. Well, it's currently running in the West End and Broadway, as I mentioned. We opened just almost 2 months ago now, my cast, with a third cast to be put into the show. And I'm in it. We have a year contract in the West End, but it's currently, I don't know when tickets actually on sale till, but I'm sure it's just we're at the Fortune Theatre in the West End. So go to the Operation Mincemeat website and you'll be able to book a ticket.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, your secret future, what have you got planned? Or is this just absorbing everything you have?
Yeah, this being a part of like a big Western show, it kind of takes everything, because we're doing 8 shows a week. So this is absolutely my focus and passion at the moment. And as I say, I'm going to be in it for the year. So no plans yet after this. We shall have to wait and see. I'll have to come back and chat with you when I can say something.
Oh, yes. Danny Becker, thank you so much for joining us on Shout Out, and break a leg.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
That's not really beatbox, but you know.
They kind of are.
That's called Vikings. It's by a DJ called Hedegaard.
It's like he's in the studio with me. God.
It was a bit of a banging track.
I might nick that one. Yeah.
You said that last time I played it too.
Oh, I probably got it then somewhere.
You shazammed it. You just don't know where it is.
I mean, I say it often on the show. I do find these things with Shazam.
Yeah.
You'd be watching a TV or a movie or something. You're like, oh, I really like that song in the background. Yeah. Shazam it. It's great. We could do that.
Technology. God, look at us.
So I don't know what happened to the Google one. You were supposed to be able to whistle or sing.
Well, like hum along to the... Oh.
And it would actually guess the song based on that.
Can it get it from a beatbox?
I don't know.
Maybe we tested it.
Obviously, it didn't work very well because it disappeared very quick. But then Google have a tendency to do that.
Well, like Google Glass when they did that. And then all of a sudden it was just disappeared and they didn't want to talk about it anymore. Mm. And now they've got Meta glasses instead.
Yeah, Meta's Facebook though, isn't it? Not Google.
Changing the subject a little bit, has anyone noticed that how the media, television and print media, have totally ignored the fact that the Equalities Commission have removed a lot of the guidance because they were being sued by the Good Law Project? No one's reported it except the LGBTQ press.
You're right, I haven't seen it on any mainstream news. Yeah. I see it on social media quite a lot.
Well, there's this small little guy over in America who's causing a lot more of a fuss that they seem to give all the airtime to at the moment, but then he's blowing up half the world, isn't he? You know?
Yep.
To them's probably more important.
Yeah, but not only that, the press got hold of the fact that Scottish police have now said that they will go by biological sex, so a trans woman will be searched by a bloke.
Lovely.
A male police officer, yeah. So that made headlines, the BBC, but the fact that the Equalities Commission had to reverse everything they put in about single-sex bases never even made us a sideline, let alone a headline.
What stories do they want to tell, huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
It was interesting to see a few people backpedalling on their support for the lovely Rowling as well.
Well, she's taken a bit of a hit by, well, first of all, Stephen Fry come off the fence, finally.
Yeah.
Boy George has had a go at her.
That was good.
Apparently, according to her, I don't know why you all thought you were my friends in the first place. Did you read that?
Little kid. Now she's sent to her cohorts, her army, is to take photographs of all women in toilets now, just in case there's a trans woman amongst them.
Yes, which I'm pretty sure is a bit illegal.
It's illegal to take photographs in toilets, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. That's why there's those cameras.
One would hope so.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, but yeah, and she attacked an all-female newspaper as well, didn't she? She went after them, and because they didn't agree with what she said, she said that they were all.
Yeah, they were very angry because they were all. She was almost dissing, you know, women.
Well, that was basically what they said back, was that she was dissing women. Yeah. Yeah, I still don't get it. I know that she had some issues with a bloke a while back, but there's no excuse for what's going on now. Attacking of the trans community, it just doesn't make any logical sense, you know.
No.
And was it Stephen Fry that said he thinks she's been radicalised?
I don't. She's just an absolute idiot. And
it's a shame when people get that much
something wrong with her, isn't there, mentally.
She
is mentally disturbed.
To get up in the morning and instead of thinking of your breakfast toast or something, to actually go on the internet and start slagging off trans people for hours a day is not normal behaviour. And does not indicate a well balanced mind.
No.
It is a shame the number of people who get very, very wealthy and then don't do good things with it, you know. I mean, at least people like Bill Gates has set up a foundation and tried to do lots of philanthropy, and, you know, I mean, he said he intends to die having given it all away and done lots of good things, you know. And I'm not saying he's perfect either. I mean, he's had things in the past, but at least he's one of those ones trying to do something good, whereas Bezos wants to fly to the moon. And,
and rent Venice for his wedding.
Yeah, rent Venice. I was like, what?
Just go on a beach somewhere, mate. Come on.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah. But we'll keep you informed as it goes, as we always do. So now we are 2 weeks away from Pride. We'll be broadcasting from 10 in the morning all the way through till we die.
Wow, that took a turn.
That is dark, Andy. That is dark.
It is a long day, though, isn't it?
It is a long day.
It does kind of kill us all by the end.
We will survive, listeners. Yeah. We'll be okay.
Yeah. Lucy's going to keep us propped up because she knows how to do everything.
Yeah. Except beatbox.
Well, that's pending, actually.
Anyway, if you are looking forward to Pride, let us know. We'd love to see your photos and all of that. Look out for us on the march as well. Steph and Lucy will be there. If you want to get hold of us, there's plenty of ways.
You can contact us via our website, socials, or plain old email. shoutoutradio.lgbt is where you want to head for all that info.
Have I got this right? This week's 1857.
Yes, that's the year.
Oh.
A good vintage.
Oh, Steph's birthday. Say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.